Let's start with that crazy headline that you died, and for so many years.
That is a headline.
I know.
Well, and when Cameron sees the movie, he'll get to see that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, yeah. No, wait a minute. No, CJ, I don't like a lot of drama in my documentaries. I don't know about if I can handle watching somebody die. As long as you come back to life, I guess I'll be okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so. I do. It's all good after that.
Welcome to the Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Welcome back into the Disruption Zone. I am Leland Conway along with Cameron Mills. Many of you know that Cameron and I have talked a lot about diet, being that we're both fans of the paleo diet, cutting out the carbs, eating low carb, and cutting out all the bad chemicals and eating more clean food, you know, like real grass-fed raised meat, that kind of thing. And I don't know about you, Cameron, but it's changed the way I feel. I mean, I feel at 43 years old, I feel like better than I did when I was 25.
Well,
it's been amazing.
As you know, Leland, I have gone back and forth on this, not because I don't believe in it, but because I am a weak-willed man. And because this is a difficult thing, because to change, look, I'm being asked to change my lifestyle, and I'm being asked to go against everything that the food pyramid has taught me since first grade.
Yes.
And so now I'm having to learn what the correct human diet is. And what I'm excited about today is that I've watched a trailer of the gentleman who is our guest today. I've watched a trailer of his movie. I'm going to watch his movie, his documentary. But he starts off talking about what the media tells us. And as you and I have said, Leland, it bothers me. There's nothing more that enrages me or makes me fear for the future of our country than the media. The media has more power than anyone. They have more power than the president. They have more power than anyone. And they've got to get it right. They've got to stop worrying about clicks and start worrying about being accurate. And that's part, to my understanding, part of what we're fighting in this case, too, where, you know, we hear all these studies, but are we getting the right information?
Well, let's welcome in our guest. CJ Hunt is quite an interesting guy. He's been in media all his life, kind of doing it the right way. And actually, and if you go back and you look at his story, he actually died in 1978, dropped dead.
What?
Yeah, he died in 1978. He dropped dead running on a track and was revived, and we'll get him to tell that story. But he started looking for the perfect human diet after that, and that is the name of his documentary, and I've watched it, and I recommend everybody watch it. I want to welcome in CJ Hunt. CJ, how are you?
Good, Leland. How are you?
It's great to talk to you again. Let's start with that crazy headline that you died, and for so many years.
That is a headline.
I know.
Well, and when Cameron sees the movie, he'll get to see that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, yeah. No, wait a minute. No, CJ, I don't like a lot of drama in my documentaries. I don't know about if I can handle watching somebody die. As long as you come back to life, I guess I'll be okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so. I do. It's all good after that.
Well, let's start with this. Let's start with that story. What happened to you, and what sent you? Because you're a film director, you've got some pretty cool credits to your career, but you should have been dead, like for reals. They said you had maybe 2 years to live after you collapsed on the running track. Tell us the story. Walk us through how you got to where you are today.
Sure. In 1978, when I was 24, I used to be a motocross racer. I was in sports, and that's a very physically demanding sport. And when I was, I got injured riding somebody else's bike, a silly thing. And then I was training to get back in shape, and I went to Beverly Hills High School on Memorial Day, 1978, and I went a lap and a half and promptly dropped dead. Now, luckily, there was an anesthesiologist that showed up to go jogging moments later. And he got to me in the first 3 to 4 minutes, they think, and started giving me CPR. And someone else went and called the paramedics, and they drove over from UCLA Medical Center, which was nearby, and started giving me CPR and, you know, jump-started me on the film.
Field. Well, on the film, too.
Yeah,
and they you know, they jump-started me and put me in the ambulance and, you know, tried to make sure I didn't have any brain damage or anything like that while they took me to UCLA Medical Center. Well, when I came out of there, I learned that I had a heart birth defect, and the only thing that they knew about it at the time is that most people died from it, and I was, you know, most people weren't brought back from it or saved. It's something like when football players in high school and college, and you hear about them dropping dead on the field, and in most cases, they can't get them back. They often have that same kind of heart birth defect. And, you know, and as you said, Leland, it's that when I checked out of UCLA, they gave me a laundry list of things that to be, you know, have be worried about. Basically, is that I shouldn't walk upstairs. I shouldn't go anywhere alone without someone that knew CPR, you know, that I had about a 50% chance of dying within the next 2 years, and maybe I'd survive sex. And I was 24.
So which one of those things were you the most concerned about then?
Well, oddly enough, I was concerned about all of that.
Okay, all right.
I mean, if it's on your podcast, I mean, the first time that I, you know, was in the circumstances to have sex somewhere in my future, I remember stopping and grabbing my throat and counting my pulse and looking at my watch.
Oh, wow.
Honestly.
I bet that went over well.
Should I be doing this?
What are you doing, honey?
Just
checking my pulse.
Exactly. It's not very romantic.
No, it doesn't sound like it at all.
So this, like, you basically, though, because this is what I love about you, is you said, I'm not going to accept this.
Oh, yeah. You know, it was really discouraging at the time, because all they had was beta-blocking drugs to try to control heart runs, because one of the reasons this happens is your heart takes off and starts, you know, beating way too fast on its own. And those drugs are nervous system suppressants, and when they gave them to me, it was four times a day, and all of a sudden I went from being happy-go-lucky and cheerful to depressed, crying all the time. Mm. You know, I couldn't exercise at all because it keeps you from pumping enough blood to be able to keep up with your muscles. It was just a bad situation, and I realized that, you know, after doing this for a couple of months, that I just couldn't live that way. And so I took myself off the drugs. I had my mom come and live with me for a while and follow me in her car when I went jogging. And I figured if I made it past the first 3 minutes, I'd be okay.
Right.
And you know, that was the only way to start having a good quality of life. And then in addition to that, I started, as you had mentioned earlier, experimenting with diet in order to improve my health in any way I could.
What was the thing? Okay, so let's start from that point on. You started experimenting with diet. That sounds like, okay, I don't know that I even have the wherewithal, and I mean the mental wherewithal, to experiment with diet as much as I would want to. And maybe this is what you mean, as far as I want to start doing research and finding out, okay, how can I cure this, or how can I affect my body in a positive way with my diet? So in that sense, what did you do? Where did you start? Who did you turn to for information as far as, okay, this is what the doctors are saying? And I got a friend who's been through a seemingly very, with the exception of the death part, similar story. You know, had an issue, went to the hospital, checked out of the hospital, was told, do this, and finally decided, no, I'm going to turn to my diet and try to figure this out. So where did you turn first to get the information you needed to start experimenting with your diet?
Well, you know, back then, there was nowhere to turn except for the library and bookstores. And the regular medical establishment was not keen on me doing anything except what they wanted me to do. In fact, they kicked me out of a supervised exercise program because, you know, I didn't want to take the medications. So I was basically out on my own. So where I ended up going to was a place called Bodhi Tree Bookstore in Los Angeles, where they had everybody's information that had been printed, and that's everything from, you know, raw foodists to vegans to vegetarians to, you know, anything you could think of as far as some kind of a healthy approach in their minds towards recovery and having the best life that you could have. So I actually had to start there, you know, and sit in the aisles and start reading books. And where I ended up going from all of that was doing what a lot of people do now, even with paleo and keto and whatnot, is what they do is N equals one. They do one experiment with themselves and see how they do. And I did everything. I did water fasting. I did juice fasting. You know, I was a raw food vegan for 5 years, so I really get it.
That must have sucked.
The vegan people now, you know, and
yeah,
and vegetarian and all of that kind of stuff. And I did Harvey in Maryland Diamonds, you know, program where you just eat fruit in the morning. It's and separate all your starches and your proteins from each other and that kind of a thing. It's called natural hygiene. And, you know, what I found was that ultimately I ended up, while I was doing, the last thing I really did was the raw food veganism. And after I'd been doing that for a while and people kept saying, well, you don't look like you're a raw food vegan, and, you know, I seem to be holding it together pretty well, my mom, who was really my best friend, was killed by a drunk driver. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I just wasn't bouncing back. You know, so no matter how well-intentioned the things that I was doing dietarily, it just wasn't able to help me recover from that kind of stress or trauma. And the truth is that the little voice inside said, eat fish. Eat fish. I know I sound very Oprah Winfrey right now. You know, that's the way it happened. And once I started adding fish back, and I'm still eating lots of salads and lots of fresh whole foods and all those things that raw food vegans would be doing, but I just added back animal proteins and fats. And in a month, I gained 8 pounds, you know, of muscle, you know. So, and I started feeling better, and, you know, and my sense of humor started coming back, and I got a little bit of spark back into my life. But it was, you know, it took doing that and going through that course to say, okay, I need to eat this stuff. I'll leave the raw food veganism behind and move forward.
So you at one point in the video, in the movie that you did, and I don't want to give away too much because I want people to go watch it. But at one point, and I love the way you handled veganism. You weren't insulting. Yeah. You didn't, you know, strike out at them. But you went to this vegan conference and you just kind of let them tell the story. And it was so, like, my wife and I were watching your documentary, and when they did the vegan part, we both laughed. Like, you didn't say anything. You just let the lady talk. And it was like, we were just like, no, that's not right. I guess it was that voice you were talking about. Like, something didn't add up.
Well, yeah, you know, and that's also where I, at that particular, it's a World Vegetarian Conference in San Francisco, and since I lived there at the time going to school, you know, I decided, well, I would start with the interviews there. And as you say, just let them tell their own story, and that would be enough of a contrast to the other search that I was doing, you know, in the film. It was interesting. I mean, there's a guy there that insists that dogs are vegetarian. And had a dog vegan line. And the young lady that you mentioned, you know, she is, you know, sold on the idea that humans are herbivores, like cows. You know,
cows have like 6 stomachs. We only have 1. There's a reason.
By the way, you know what? It's funny is dogs are they are herbivores based on what most of us feed our dogs these days. I mean, the first ingredient most of the food. I know. But if you go by the first ingredient most of the food, it's some sort of grain.
Yeah.
In the bad food, not the good food. CJ, let me ask this. It just so happens what you're saying. I had this two days ago. I had a very good friend, a couple that I had married, that I'd officiated their wedding, and his wife is with child, just found that out. It was a wonderful announcement to be a part of. Well, she's a vegetarian. She's not vegan. She's vegetarian. And I sat there knowing everything that I've learned from Leland and all the Disruption Zones we've done, where we have talked about, you know, what is basically, not to steal from your documentary title, but what is the perfect human diet? What should we be stealing from, or what should we be eating? Well, what should our diet look like? And I sat there listening to her, and I'm asking her about how do you get the proteins and how do you do this and that. And how do you deal with someone? Because Leland's alluding to the fact that you just kind of let them talk, and there seems to be a lot of kindness in your retort, and you're not argumentative necessarily with them. But what do you do with someone in a one-on-one situation when you're like, look, here's my story. I understand your story, but let me tell you, like, what I believe and what I feel is the perfect human diet.
Well, in my normal life, as a rule, that doesn't come up, you know, and I wouldn't try to be confrontational.
Sure.
Although I have been at the supermarket a couple of times and said, you know, when someone's picking up a plant-based burger, said something I probably shouldn't have said. But like to my friends, like, oh, that doesn't taste very good. But, you know, to be mildly discouraging. But no, it doesn't really come up in my day-to-day activities. I mean, for the most part, I ignore and continue to ignore the attacks I get online because don't like the movie. I mean, there are people that have never seen the movie because they're vegan and vegetarian attack it.
Right.
I think probably the most telling one was, well, two of them is one of the bigger vegan and vegetarian leaders basically said, well, I haven't seen the film, but.
Yeah.
And the other good one was that All she could think of doing was attacking the size of my ears.
Yeah, I love those. I love those. I have nothing. I have nothing to attack based on what you think or believe, but I'm gonna attack you physically.
Should have said, "Hey, right. meat eating meat gives you big ears, and now I can hear."
Yeah.
Right. Like, oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So but, okay, you know, it's interesting. I tend to refer people to the film.
Yeah. Right.
You know, or the companion book, and it's the kind of thing where, well, just follow along and let this, you know, watch it for yourself, and then you have all the information from which you can make your own decision about.
Well, let's talk about how wrong the current food pyramid is. I actually got into a discussion about this the other day with someone about how, because there was this new article that came out. I think it was Business Insider that ran it. This is the new thing they're doing, and I've noticed a string lately of attacks on keto and paleo diets, and this latest one was called Keto Crotch. And I didn't read it, but I saw the
yeah. image. Well,
we can send it to you, CJ, because yeah, I just sent it to Leland as a joke right before we went on the air.
Yeah, you'll love it. A lady sent it to me the other day, and she was like, I don't know about this. What is this? And I read the article, and I was like, okay. First of all, this is a dietitian, a registered dietitian, and they've learned most of the information that they've learned from the sugar-funded education industry that educates most of the people that are doing this. And on top of that, she doesn't list any of the positives to keto. She just lists that your pH balance might change. And I'm sitting here going, well, scientifically, anytime you change your microbiome, anytime you change the type of food you eat, even the location where you live, your microbiome changes. So there's pH changes in your system. That seems like that would be temporary, but they're treating this function as if it's permanent and you'll always have a stinky crotch. As opposed to all the benefits that come from this. So let's talk about how wrong the government's recommendations on what we should be eating are and why that is.
Well, and just quickly to that lady's remark, if it did push your pH that far out of the very small range that is allows us to live, we'd be dead. that's the simplest thing about that. But the government recommendations, you know, they came out of a series of, you know, rushed decisions that started out when the country was very worried about heart attacks, and you know, Eisenhower was in office, and a very charismatic scientist came up named Ansel Keys and was the one that pitched and ultimately sold the whole idea of the dietary cholesterol idea, that if you eat fats, your cholesterol is going to go up and, you know, you're going to croak. So the thing is that, of course, for 30 years, people have been buying into that. Hang on, I have a jet flying over, so.
What kind of jet? Is this a military jet?
I can't hear anything when they fly over. There's a military base right nearby.
Yes, what kind of jet was it, CJ? That's what I'm interested in. F-16, F-22?
I didn't look. It was just loud.
All right.
The thing is that there were a whole number of things that happened to keep perpetuating this, and there were scientists at the time that said, no, wait a minute, this stuff isn't proven, you know, that we really should step back before we start making recommendations that the whole country then is, you want them to follow that. Because, you know, the dietary recommendations affect schools, they affect the military,
right.
You know, all of that kind of stuff. Well, the downside was that you couldn't get scientific funding for any kind of study or anything unless you bought into that belief system. And the more and more that happened, the more and more they did whatever they could to justify those choices, even though, well, I mean, the point is they tended not to quote the things that showed that they were wrong or even reveal the studies that proved that they were wrong, but just go back to saying, oh, well, gosh, we need more studies. But ultimately, we're going to be right.
Do I have it right? Was it Ansel Keys? Was he the one, or was it a follow-on scientist where they did this study that showed the link between cholesterol going up and fat, that they cherry-picked 7 countries and left off like 35 countries where only those 7 countries showed the results that they wanted, and that was that dietary fat caused cholesterol to go up. But in those 30-some-odd other countries, it did not. So in other words, they cherry-picked the data to confirm their theory when the data actually overwhelmingly showed they were wrong. Is that the right scientist?
Yeah, that's Ansel Keys.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Well, you know, and it's interesting. I mean, and that unfortunately happens with a lot of the science that has come forward since then. trying to justify the cholesterol theory, or, you know, or to prove that animal foods are bad for you and that, you know, milk protein and animal proteins are going to destroy you, is that they just cherry pick the science. Now, of course, that side will turn around and say, well, you guys do the same thing. So it's
right.
It kind of goes around in a circle. You know, even though if someone did their homework and dove into those that research, they'd say, well, wait a second, some of these are really, it's really good research. It's randomly controlled trials, and it's coming up with different things than what, you know, Mr. Scientist Vegan Vegetarian says is the course of action. You know, it's like the China study. It's kind of like the go-to source by T. Colin Campbell of the whole justification for vegetarianism over, you know, eating meat.
What disturbs me about this is that, you know, you did an analogy in your film about the amount of human history where we've been eating this way, the paleo diet. And we're very arrogant right now. We think that the era in which we live is the only era in which humans ever thrived. And the truth of the matter is that if you look back many, many, many thousands of years, humans were eating a paleolithic type of diet. They were eating meat. They were eating what they could scavenge from the ground. They weren't eating grains. They weren't even agriculturally producing grains. They weren't eating starches. They were eating these basic elements, and we were thriving. We didn't have diabetes. We didn't have cancer. We didn't have heart disease. I mean, they've looked up fossils, and they can see that on the off chance that you didn't get eaten by a saber-toothed tiger, you lived probably into your 70s, 80s, and 90s, and were quite healthy and quite vigorous. And yet,
barring injury, infection, and as you say, saber-toothed tigers,
right?
They were, you know, many individuals were very long-lived. You know, their circumstances, they had different health challenges than we have today. And they were much more robust, as the scientists would say, and much healthier. And they were taller, they had bigger brains, they had, you know, thicker and more, the stronger bones than we have. And you can see this within the fossil record from when we were in the Upper Paleolithic, which is the period, Paleolithic period you're referring to with modern humans, and when we switched over to an agricultural society. And you can also use the same kind of testing to show, well, what happened to us when we got shorter and we got weak and brittle bones and we started getting dental cavities and we had rotting around the orbits of the eyes. And as it turns out, when it's tested out, well, that's when we started eating grains as the mainstay of our diet. Jeez. But you're right. The authentic human diet is something that, you know, a lot of people just kind of go, well, you know, it's not 10, 15,000 years ago, so we don't have to eat that way anymore,
right?
You know, even though the record shows that we were healthier and stronger. Now, the things that we ate, interestingly enough, are not as wide-ranged as some people would assume, is that we really liked big herbivores, land herbivores, and especially in Northern Europe, as the scientists told me, very little in the way of plant matter. I mean, anything above 40 degrees north latitude, then, you know, we were coming out of an ice age. Not a lot of plants grew anyway. And if you weren't hunting for your subsistence, you were likely not going to survive.
So we ate mostly meat.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's just it. And it's we did. In fact, in the Max Planck Institute in Leipzig, Germany, we went there and we're guided there to look at human bones and animal bones and Neanderthal bones, and they have a way of doing a radioactive bioanalysis now, when they extract the collagen from these bones and get out all the impurities. They can tell you exactly what that individual or animal ate. And interestingly enough is when you put these all together in a food web to establish, well, you know, the little bunnies are over here and, you know, the reindeer are over here, and then in the top of the food web, you have, you know, wolves and bears and Neanderthals, and guess who? so that indicated the food sources, what was left in your collagen and the nitrogen signature could tell us now what they were eating. So it was really fascinating, because that's the first time that I was aware of that we had hard scientific evidence of what the authentic human diet really was. I mean, there was a lot of theory before that, and they figure out, well, you know, we think people ate more animal foods because the bone, you can find the bones, and the plant material doesn't survive. And as it turns out, even the bones only survive well in covered circumstances, which is kind of where people got the whole caveman thing, is that when they are in those circumstances, they're better able to survive time, you know, and the elements. But so this is the first time you can say, well, no, we weren't mostly plant eaters. We were actually primarily meat eaters.
So, CJ, let's do this, because I'm going to give out, and we'll give this out at the end as well, but the title of CJ's documentary is The Perfect Human Diet, and I just pulled it up real quick. It can be seen on video or Amazon Prime, Hulu, iTunes, YouTube, Google Play, all the Vudu, all the usual places. But let's just narrow this down, because we've not really danced around it. We basically said it, but can you give us like a minute to 2 minute primer on what is the perfect human diet?
Well, the perfect human diet, based on the scientific research, you know, and the evidence that we've been able to pull from that, in our modern time, the easiest way to think about it, I think, and it'll probably serve you eventually, Cameron, if you want to try it.
Now, wait a minute. I've tried it. I've just fallen off the wagon a few times, so easy.
Well, we all did, so don't worry about it. You know, if you think of it in a new way, you know, give it a new concept, and think of it not as keto or paleo or something.
Okay.
Think of it as human food and non-human food.
Okay.
So, and when you do that, it's really easy to set up some major categories that can help guide you to really simple choices. So, in our time, the human foods would be things like lean meat, and I'll explain that in a minute, chicken, okay, fish, turkey, preferably raised from an animal, eating what it's designed to eat, like when you talk about pasture-raised, you know, eggs or beef or anything else like that. Fruits, nuts, and vegetables. Now, this is above the ground vegetables, like leafy green vegetables, not tubers and starchy root vegetables. And the non-human foods, in the simple breakdown, is grains, which, as I understand it from the scientists, is probably the worst problem we've got.
Yeah.
And dairy, after 2 years old, we're not designed for dairy, and certainly not from another animal. You know, and then beans and potatoes. So these are foods that we are simply not designed to eat, and we are eating them, but only because we're able to process them in such a fashion that we can create food-like substances and then, you know, get them down to your stomach. But that doesn't mean it's something that's going to, you know, really make you healthy and add to your health in your life. So that's really it in a nutshell. It's the human foods and non-human foods is the way I like to.
What have you experienced from eating this diet? Like, I'm not exactly sure how old you are now, but 1978, I mean, I could have done the math, I guess, but
I'm 65.
Yeah, 65. You look fantastic.
And by the way, not only does he look great, Leland, his ears are not that big. I don't know what that lady was talking about. I'm looking at pictures right now.
Sure.
His ears are very normal size.
Yeah, very normal ears. Well, but you've had a very successful career. I didn't know till today when I was... I was looking up your film biography that you were on Dynasty. Hello.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of cool. My mom loved that show. But I mean, you've had a fruitful career. You defied what the doctor said was going to happen. So, like, what are you stick to this diet? How long have you been on it? What has it done for you? How do you feel?
Well, I suppose you could say that I've been on it, what someone might call religiously, strictly, something like that, since I went and spoke with the scientists, which would have been the summer of 2006. Now, mind you, I was very close to that before. You know, I didn't eat sugar. I didn't eat wheat. You know, I didn't eat most grains. I might have, previous to that, I might have occasionally had, you know, like sweet potato or something like that, but it was not a big part of my diet. And it's mostly just, you know, fruits and vegetables and nuts and non-starchy vegetables and protein sources, you know, and healthy fats. Although back then I also had protein shakes because I was going to school, made out of egg white. But
egg whites.
Yeah. Well, I was in school. I had to get to class. So, you know, and when you're in your 40s and you have to go back to school with, you know, 20-year-olds, you got to hustle.
Yeah.
You know, so
how do you feel now?
Where are we going?
What I'm trying to get to is, at 65, you look fantastic. You're obviously doing something right. You're fit. You're in shape. You attribute this to the diet. So,
I think it optimized my potential to end up this way, and I haven't had any other disease states come along and, you know, take me out like so many people do. Mm. You know, my heart, the only issue with my heart is the same thing I've always had, which is the birth defect, and, you know, which makes the center of my heart twice as thick as normal and things like that, and a little bit of electrical issues. But other than that, I didn't develop stomach cancer, and I, you know, didn't get lung cancer, and I didn't get diabetes, and, you know, any of the other things that might have happened if I'd continued to eat a normal diet.
And I think that's one of the things, CJ, that we hear a lot, and this is where I get frustrated into the media part. Because if you pay attention to, you know, NBC Nightly News, Fox News, whatever, anytime a new study comes out, you hear the word "may" thrown in night and day, may. And it's like we just gloss over that word and toss it out and say "will." And you know, for example, if in the cover of your
bacon
documentary,
will kill you.
Bacon, red meat causes cancer. How many times have we heard that in the last 30 years? And it just kind of struck me as you just said, I haven't had stomach cancer. Now, that's not to say it couldn't happen, but, you know, that's all we've heard is that these kind of things help cause cancer. And yet now, you know, it's not just you, and you know that. There's this whole movement towards, wait a minute, no, this is what we should be eating. And I think what Leland was talking about earlier is how do you feel? You know, CJ, when I did the diet, and I am kind of off and on and usually kind of closer. I don't do it fully, but usually kind of closer to doing it because Leland has taught me a whole lot, and I'm eating much better than I used to. I can tell you, I feel different. Now, I don't know that I've been on it long enough to say, well, I've not had any, as you say, disease states, but there is, and maybe it's placebo. I won't deny that it could be. I'm just telling you that I feel different when I do this diet as closely as possible as maybe you should. I just feel better, more energy. I feel more alert. I feel like my brain is like, you know, activating on different levels. And I know that sounds crazy to other people, and I'm sure they've heard this all before, but I'm just telling you, it makes you feel, at least me, it made me feel like I was operating on another level, a level that I hadn't operated on in a long time.
No, you know, and I hear that a lot, too. And, you know, if it's a placebo, God bless you. You know, you do feel better, or you wouldn't, you know, be continuing to operate firing on all cylinders.
Right.
You know, it's, and in the end, it's not a placebo. The doubt is created by the way that we've been raised for the last, you know, the information we've been giving for the last 30, 40, 50 years,
right,
which has been wrong. You know, so we're scared. I mean, I remember thinking, oh, gee, if I eat that pat of butter, it was really hard to cut it and put it on my food.
Yep, right.
You know, because fat's supposed to be bad for you, and I'd done all the low-fat, high-carb stuff. You know, so it is a transition, and it seems to me that it depends on the kind of support systems you have around you with friends and family and whether they are good with you doing whatever you can to try to take care of yourself instead of saying, ah, just have one more piece of cake.
I have a family member, CJ. I was just she's on this diet and she's been sticking to it, and she had some family members come over to her house the other night and mock her because she didn't want to accept a gift of like bran flakes. And she was explaining,
wait a minute,
to them,
who gives a gift of bran flakes?
Yeah, long story. I don't want to get all into that. But anyway, she basically said, listen, this is the diet I'm on. I'm not doing that. And they told her, this is what they told her. They said, any diet that leaves out a food group is not a healthy diet, right? So, right, but here's the funny part. So then they stayed to visit, and for the rest of the night, they sat around and talked about all their ailments and how everything was sore, and they couldn't find a good doctor to take care of all their ailments. And she's just kind of like, well, you know.
But you got those food groups.
But you got
so
those food groups.
What's the problem?
Well, yeah, and the thing is when people say things like that, they don't stop to think, well, wait a second, that works both ways.
Yeah.
If vegans are not eating animal foods and they're not eating any animal foods or any animal fats, well, then that's two food groups.
So, you know, right.
It seems to me that it's really easy to point fingers. You know, it's that old thing when, you know, you're pointing at somebody and you got four pointing back.
Yeah.
You know, when you do that. But, yeah, it's interesting. And there's a... You know, I think in some cases, and I don't know these people, of course, but that they're afraid that you're going to show them up, you know,
right,
and they don't have the will to want to change anything, and they don't have enough motivation, whatever it is, to want to do that and improve their lives in that fashion.
Right.
You know, so I think, unfortunately, that there's a lot of psychological elements that pop up in our culture that are not supportive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Living your life and living it your way and living it as healthy as you can.
But then you look at all the people on hover rounds. You know,
the
thing is like
all the rascals.
Yeah. I don't. Here's the thing. I can't control a lot of elements in my life, CJ, but I can do the best I can to avoid spending the last years of my life on a hover round scooter wandering around a big box store. I would rather die. I want people to say, yeah, he was 90 and he fell off that mountain. You know what I mean? That's the way I want to go out.
I do. It's really sad going into supermarkets and seeing what it's like in these days.
Yeah.
I mean, a year ago I lived in Hamden, Connecticut, and I would go to the local supermarket. And honest to God, even the young folks were leaning over the cart, the shopping cart, and just plodding along as if they had no life.
It was holding them up, yeah.
It was just sad, of course, and I thought, well, I don't really like shopping there, but it's the only place I can go, right?
Right, yeah.
And it's an unfortunate circumstances, and that's why, at this point, the people that are able to make change, either, you know, it's really a life and death, and they just don't want to keep doing what they've been doing before. You know, it's the old thing, you know, that if you keep doing what you've been doing and expect different results, well, that's not very smart. The definition of insanity in itself.
Yeah, no doubt. There's a couple of things, CJ. There's a couple things I want to hit before we finish up here because I don't want to take too much of your time. But one, this was what fascinated me, and Cameron, you'll get a kick out of this. What percentage of the grocery store should we never even go in?
Oh well, you know, you should only really, in most circumstances, just go around the outer aisles and completely ignore the middle of the store. You know, the only thing you might find in the middle of the store in some places is the fresh nuts, you know, and things like that. Maybe if you wanted bottled water or something like that. But all the fresh fruits and vegetables, as a rule, are on the outside.
The
fresh meats, and, you know, and if you still eat dairy, the freshest dairy is going to be on the outside aisle, you know, and seafood, you know, all of that. And I know that some store designs are shifting a little bit, but that's really the way most supermarkets go these days.
Don't you wonder if they're not shifting the supermarkets now just to trick us? Just to trick us, Leland. We're figuring it out. It's coming out. CJ's got his documentary. We've talked to other people. Now they're gonna reverse it. They're gonna put all the good stuff in the middle. Now we got people going around the ring to get all those grains.
Pretty soon, the fresh meat's gonna be right next to the Cinnabon, CJ.
CJ, I got a quick question for you. What is tonight? What is on your menu? What is CJ Hunt having for dinner tonight?
Actually, barbecued steak.
Barbecued steak.
All right, now when you say barbecued steak, out in Kentucky out here, we just say a grilled steak. When you say barbecue,
There's nothing on it. It's just salt and pepper.
Okay, salt and pepper. Okay, so, and then that's it? I mean, no veggies, obviously no potatoes.
Well,
but,
you know, I've been experimenting a little this last month with the whole carnivore kind of idea, so I haven't been eating veggies. You know?
Really?
And if I do have more now, I would just have some, you know, a small salad or something leafy green.
Yeah.
You know, or because I'm very curious to see if I can move the needle anymore by trying this form of an authentic human diet.
How has that been working out, the carnivore diet? And this is, by the way, just for people that know, this is a new fad that's come up. And
call it a fad. It could be a lifestyle.
Well, it's become a fad, but there's some legitimate people that have been doing it. I think Sean Baker, who's a doctor, who's been doing this, and he's kind of popularized it. And also Jordan Peterson.
Yep.
And his daughter both solved complete immunodeficiency issues with this diet. How has it been working for you?
Well, yeah, I think it's probably a little early to know of any major things because I have been eating so well all along.
Right.
You know, so I think it's one of these things for me. I haven't had any, you know, blood tests or anything like that to show if any of that stuff has changed. The last one I had about a month ago when I was starting, everything was fine, you know, and in the normal ranges. You know, which I don't know, may not be saying much depending on what normal is, but you know, I think it's interesting. You know, I think most people without some kind of, you know, unique reason to want to do it might not want to, quote unquote, be that restrictive in the way they eat. But I think in some ways it's somewhat like fasting, is that after you do it for a while, the other foods don't, you know, they aren't, you aren't tempted if you're eating enough.
That's right.
Of the other foods. And and I think it's not too far off, actually, than a real kind of regimented keto diet that people are using in order to control some of these other issues. And I think, you know, with some people that they have to eliminate everything, oddly enough, even lettuce, you know, in order to not have an immune response, which could be all sorts of different things. I read about one the other day that it would be arthritis kinds of things. And it was just their, it's just their thing that they have to take it a little bit further. But most people, it seems to me, can do very well on doing what, like what you have said, Leland, you know, is just eating as much fresh animal foods as you can and fresh vegetables. And, you know, if you can get organic, great, and that's always the best. And if you can get pasture-raised, great. And if you can't, by the way, you know, one of the things you can do if you go in is get those steaks and get those things and trim off the fat that was from their commercially raised diet.
Okay.
And just add back some of the healthier fats. You can get like Kerrygold butter, which is pasture-raised butter from Ireland. And I don't know if you have Trader Joe's where you live, but.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah,
it's really cheap, you know, and it's really good. And once you try that, I suspect you may not want anybody else's. But you can do that, you know, and if you're. You can add back avocados, you know, and you can add back coconut oil if you like that, you know, and that kind of thing. So there are ways of kind of upgrading a traditional commercial type diet if you don't have the funds to, you know, go hog wild.
Mark Sisson talks about don't eat the fat in a restaurant steak. Eat the fat in your home steak.
See, I needed to hear that because CJ, and I appreciate you saying that because you know since I've been dabbling in this, I've heard about the good fat, and I thought, okay, well, if I'm eating the good meat, which is basically I'm eating, you know, red meat protein or eating protein, the good fat is on the good meat. But I've not heard that. Okay, if you didn't get, you know, farm raised, grass fed, grass finished, you know, then don't necessarily eat that fat. Go get good fat from somewhere else and have that as a complement to the steak or the complement to what you're eating. And that's a new one. I'd also say this is for people who are like me, and I hate to say dabbling because I believe wholeheartedly, but the hard part for me, CJ, is the hump. It's getting over the making the transition. And you just mentioned it like a fast where you get to the point where all of a sudden the bad stuff stops being desirable to you. And there is like there's a 10-day window in there that if I will eat well, if I will eat the good stuff, if I will cut out the carbs and cut out the potatoes and cut out, you know, some of the fast food, because I spend a lot of time on the road and that's my difficulty. If I will cut it out, I don't want it anymore. You know, my guilty pleasure is sugary cereal late at night. One of the worst things I could do at one of the worst points of time ever. And once I get that out of my system, I don't want it. You know, I will go, and Leland's taught me, go get a spoonful of almond butter, you know, and eat that if you've got to eat something late at night. I mean, all this good stuff that once you get to that point, you don't want to go back to it because you do. You just feel better.
Well, that's just it. And, you know, in our day and age, you have to prepare a little bit. I mean, you know, you might have to carry a little cooler in your car and have some snacks in there. I mean, you can, if you find a really good beef jerky or you make some yourself or you know, roast up some extra stuff at home and then, you know, bag it and, you know, put it in a little cooler in your car so you have it when you're on the road. I don't know how extensive that is. If you're stuck and the only place you've got is, you know, a Mickey D's or someplace like that, you know, go in and get in the double burger and, before even thinking about it, throw away the bun.
That's the Leland Conway special. I've done it many times.
You know, I had to do that in an airport in Europe once. You know, it was kind of like, okay, it's the only thing here. So,
It's funny because Cameron.
And let me say this too, is that for people who don't feel like they can afford the pasture-raised stuff and whatnot, even if they ate commercially raised meat and chicken and stuff like that, and even with those fats and stuff, they'd be far healthier than eating a standard American diet.
Totally agree with that.
Huge jump forward.
Yeah. Cameron and I are both on the road quite a bit, and for me, it's definitely cooler in the car.
Yeah.
Beef jerky, almond butter. You know, if my wife and I are going on the road, we love to travel, we love the road trip, we'll make up a big old batch of tuna fish with Mark Sisson's mayo. The avocado oil mayo, and we'll make up a big old batch of tuna fish and, you know, maybe some salmon salad or something and eat on that for a couple of days. And then when that runs out, you know, it's Chick-fil-A and the grilled chicken and throw away the bun, that kind of thing. Do you fast, CJ?
I don't anymore. You know, ever since that occurrence with my mom, you know, I actually did a 21-day water fast. And when, because it was more emotional and spiritual at that time for me than health-oriented. And when I came out of that, I just said, I can't do this anymore. You know, it just, I just couldn't. And prior to that, when she'd been hit, I lost 20 pounds in the first week. Just I couldn't eat.
Wow. Wow.
So it would not have served me to be doing that again. And quite honestly, that I don't think, as far as a diet is concerned, is for the reason for doing that.
Do you constrict your window,
though?
There wouldn't
be any big health benefits.
Do you constrict your eating window, though? Because I typically eat on an eight-hour window. So I won't eat for 16 hours, and then I'll eat whatever my diet consists of. I'll eat it all in that 8 hours. For me, personally, that has been phenomenal. I can work out fasted, but I'll do that 5 days a week. 2 days a week, I'll just whatever I want, whenever I want. You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Do you do that, or do you just eat three meals a day?
Discipline. I'm to the point also because I'm not 40, because I'm not, you know, training to go on a date, you know, or in the early years of marriage or any of that kind of stuff, or maybe not so early. People get married at 18, but I don't have some of the same drives or concerns that someone else might want to have who really desperately wants six-pack abs, you know?
Right.
Because fasting is one of the ways, or intermittent fasting, like what you're talking about, helps move them in that direction because it gives their body a little time to, you know, eat off the fat of the land, right?
Right. So, what I'm most fascinated, though, with the fasting is the research that is showing that it basically up-generates your mitochondria, and that if you eat within a 6 to 8 hour window, your mitochondria gets stronger, gets better at clearing out bad cells. It lowers your cancer risk, those kinds of things. The side effect is that it does burn more fat. But, you know, the main point of it is it really ticks up your immune system. And I've found that since I've been doing this, and it's anecdotal, obviously, as we've been talking about, it could be placebo, which, you know, that's great if it is. But I've found that I have not gotten sick. I have not come down with your typical once a year cold or anything. In the year and a half or so that I've been fasting, I've not had that sickness. I found that fascinating.
Well, no, I think you're true. And as that kind of a medical health thing, there's more and more science showing that it's valid. And then it really is just up to the individual to say, okay, you know, a lot of people don't like the idea of discipline, but, you know,
I hear you laughing, Cameron.
It came from disciples, you know. It's that you're just a disciple to yourself at that point,
right?
You know, and,
good point.
And you want to take good care of yourself, and it's and you know, I think all that stuff is really great, particularly you know early on in your switch to this kind of a lifestyle and this kind of a method of eating. It can only benefit you in helping bounce you back from the years of stuff when we were doing. We had no idea.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't know what we were doing, and so we just ate like everybody else until this new information started popping up.
I think one thing I would say, and just kind of wrapping up, Leland, to both of you and to everyone listening, because, you know, Leland, you and I have done maybe 4 or 5 podcasts for the Disruption Zone on this topic, is, you know, if because CJ mentioned discipline, nobody likes discipline. There's actually a book out. It's an old book called The Joy of Discipline. I didn't even have the discipline to read it. And it was one of these things where, if you're going to start trying to change and transform your life, more than likely your weight, your health, that's just part of a bigger picture that you're trying to change, right? I mean, most people don't just look at one area of their life and say, that's what I need to change. Most of us say, I got a bunch of things I need to change.
Yep.
And I will say from my limited time on this lifestyle change, this diet, I would say that needs to be the first thing that changes, because that gives you the energy, the mental part of it, makes it easier to do all those other things. Because again, I'm going to go back to this. You just feel better. And I went from feeling like a lethargic 42-year-old to a energetic, filled with life 42 and a half year old once I made the transition. And then I kind of backslid a little bit, because I did. I went and got a box of Frosted Flakes one night, CJ. I apologize. But nonetheless, once you make that change, let this be the first change. And then I think people would be surprised how many other areas of their life follow suit, because now you've got the energy to have the discipline to make the changes.
Well, and I completely agree with you. And what's nice about this diet and this way of eating is that, as you both mentioned earlier, is when you're sticking to it, you get over the hump, and then you don't have to discipline yourself.
Yes.
Because you're not, you know, craving.
It's what you do. It's who you
Tony
are.
Tiger.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, before we let you go, CJ, you've got an update coming out to the Perfect Human Diet. I'm excited about this. Is it out yet, or will it be out soon? Because the first one, all I did is I watched that, and I wanted more. It was awesome. And I highly recommend everybody go find this, because your diet, it really piqued my interest. But now apparently you've got a follow-up to this, and I'm super excited about that.
Right. I'm still working on it. And, in fact, if any of your listeners want to help, I'm also still fundraising to finish production.
Excellent.
But it's called Dispelling the Lies, and it's the Perfect Human Diet, too. And in a nutshell, it's because everything that you've been talking about, the media and vegetarian and veganism, and there are a slew of vegan films that are coming out that keep making the same claims, like they do on television, where you saw the other day, or in the paper, that are wrong, that are provable as wrong, you know, and that. But the thing is they present it so emotionally that they encourage a lot of folks to say, okay, great, I don't want to eat animals.
Yeah.
And, you know, eating animals is not going to save the planet. Not eating animals, rather. You know, it's part of a whole ecosystem that we need to help the planet recover. And people just don't understand that. But there's the politics of it, and there's the media of it, and there's the, you know, in order for people to have an opportunity to say, wait a second, all this other stuff that I'm seeing that's telling me this, that it's not true, you know, there has to be another voice coming from the other side. So that's what this other film is. It's to be able to come back and say, wait a minute, Jim Cameron, just because he made Avatar, his new movie, The Game Changers, is not accurate. You know, you know, in fact, you'd like this, Leland and Cameron, is that one of his, the guy that directed the film, basically, a UFC fighter guy, said that paleo was at the beginning of 2.5 million years ago, and we were eating fruits, so that's paleo, and that's what we should be eating.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's a whole slew of this kind of stuff. It's propaganda, but there's nobody on our side coming back and saying, well, wait a second, doing the same thing in the first one. It's like, we need to be in search of the truth here in order to set the record straight, because the part of the truth is a lot of people are being harmed by the misinformation, and some of it, unfortunately, is just downright lies.
Well, Cameron texted me right before we got on with you. He said, the media is demonic. We were joking. but you know what? When you said this, it made me think. This is what's pathetic, is that you have to fundraise. You have to fundraise in order to do this project, because what you're going up against is essentially, when we talk about like 90% of the grocery store you should avoid, that food industry is funding all of the other research. That food industry is in the pockets of all of that other media and all of that other propaganda. And so we're having to go against this, and we're having to GoFundMe so we can actually go, hey, wait a minute, guys, you know, this is not, you know, you're going up against an industry that has pockets that are practically infinitely deep.
Yeah.
And that's basically everything inside the middle of the grocery store is fighting against what you have to say.
The bottom line, Leland, is we all know, if we're talking about the lies that James Cameron tells, we all saw Titanic. We know Rose and Jack could have made it on their own on top of that piece of wood. They didn't. Mythbusters proved they could have. End of story.
There you go.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't have lost the necklace, for darn sake.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, CJ. Exactly. Thank you.
CJ, it's
you're right, Leland. You know, it's an uphill battle for someone such as myself, an independent journalist, and like the things that you're doing, for that very reason. And not only do you have, for example, What the Health, right?
Yeah.
A couple of little filmmakers,
vegan,
they did Cowspiracy. In 24 hours, they raised over $100,000.
Right.
And they raised almost $300,000 before they were done on their little Kickstarter or whatever it was.
Right.
Because people believe in wanting to put that message out. Now, mind you, those contributors, most of them were just, you know, people on the street. And now we've got, as you say, you've got James Cameron's foundation, you have people who invested in the plant burger industry, you know, and even if they don't believe the plant burger industry is the way to go, it's hot.
Right.
and it's easy to make money. So you've got Silicon Valley millionaires saying, sure, here's enough money to do your movie.
Right.
And it's not like that on our side, unfortunately.
No.
You know, in fact, Even companies you would hope would want to come up and say, well, gee, wait a minute, they're a little hesitant to get involved in anything that might be considered, you know, controversial or taking on the status
and
quo.
And yet there's these amazing smart people, guys like yourself, C.J. Hunt, L. Russ, who we've interviewed, Brad Kearns, Mark Sisson, you know, Dom D'Agostino. There's some people out there, Rob Wolf, that are just amazingly smart individuals. I just wish we could figure out a way to get more people to listen to them. C.J., thanks, man. It's been a pleasure.
I hate
that we took so much time of your time this afternoon, but gosh, we really appreciate it, and we're rooting for your next movie.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you very much, guys. I really appreciate it, too.
Have a great
awesome.
Night.
Awesome. C.J. Hunt on the Disruption Zone. Cameron, thank you, buddy.
You're welcome,
That's it for us. We'll continue. We've got lots more to get to on the Disruption Zone. We're going to talk to Rob Perez.
Yep.
Who
New stuff
is the
coming
owner
out.
Of Deviate. Yeah, we got some really awesome stuff coming out, so make sure you tune us in. Download us on iTunes. We're there also on Google Play and, of course, at thedisruptionzone.com.